हरि ओम सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति 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 ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 70, Sutra 47. When the devotional faculty of the jivas becomes degraded and misdirected towards various secondary entities other than the Supreme Lord, it produces mental distraction and temporary results. Summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. Here Sona may protest. On the path of performing pious deeds, karma, where one worships the demigods, pitas, and others, many benefits are obtained. Why, then, do you say that this path of pious deeds is not good? Fearing that Sona raised this protest, the author speaks this sutra. Here the word kamya means the results of lusty desires, and itara means other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Devotional service offered to any one of the many millions of individuals, spirit souls, is not recommended by the devotees to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for such devotion merely agitates the mind. There are many, many demigods and pitas and others, many, many Shruti and Smriti scriptures describing them, many, many rules and regulations to follow in many different kinds of yajnas and worship offered to them. All this keeps a worshipper very, very busy in many, many different kinds of activities. In this way, the worshipper's mind becomes agitated and it becomes influenced by the material mode of passion. As this is described in Bhagavad Gita 2.4.1, where Lord Krishna explains, the intelligence of they who are irresolute is many-branched. In the purport to Mantra 12, Srila Prabhupada writes, in the Bhagavad Gita 7.20.23, it is said that only unintelligent, bewildered persons driven by a strong desire for sense gratification, worship the demigods for the temporary relief of temporary problems. Since the living being is materially entangled, he has to be relieved from material bondage entirely to obtain permanent relief on the spiritual plane, where eternal life, eternal bliss, life, and knowledge exists. Sri Upanishad therefore instructs that we should not seek the temporary relief of our difficulties by worshipping the dependent demigods, who can bestow only temporary benefit. Rather, we must worship the Absolute Personality of Godhead, who is all-attractive and who can bestow upon us complete freedom from material bondage by taking us back home, back to Godhead. These many kinds of demigod worship bring only temporary results. As farming and commerce brings results that are very short-lived, so the wealth, good children, and other benefits attained in this lifetime, as well as the residence in Devaloka, Pitriloka, and other benefits obtained in the next life, are all very temporary and short-lived. As a result of such unlawful demigod worship, the worshipper will not obtain the transcendental divine love, which is the only fruit of divine worship and can satisfy the soul. See, is the pious activities are appreciated by the living entity because the benefits. That's the point. There are so many benefits. Why would one give them up? Right? But the benefits are one's material facility for material happiness. Right? And so problems come up, but they're temporary problems. And we perform activities that give temporary solutions. So the difficulty is that this doesn't give any lasting result. So one should understand is the attraction to pious activities is because of the material benefits they give, right? Material stability. But there's nothing within the material world that is stable, is steady. Everything is temporary, right? That's the difficulty. So here it says, the intelligence of they who are irresolute is many branched. It is focused on one, on the Supreme Lord. Like I was saying before, it's focused on the Supreme Lord. That's the quality of the devotee, right? The quality of that of non-devotee is it's fixed on many, many different material things. We think all these different things will make us happy, right? Our money will make us happy. The family will make us happy. Our house will make us happy. Our position, you know, in society, our occupation, our recreations, our friends, our family, all these different things will make us happy. Does that make sense? So that means the intelligence is focused all over the place, so it's irresolute. So only if it's focused, then there'll be something. Then one gets somewhere, one gets some benefit. Because only by going back to Godhead do you actually solve the problem. You don't come to the transcendental platform in devotion to the Lord. No problem will actually be solved, right? Maya will always make it look like you're going to solve it, but it never has been solved, right? We never see. It's like, when if you're telling a story, when do you end the story? Yeah, when it's happy and it's on a good note like that, you know, unless it's one of these, you know, how you say, film noir or something like that, then, you know, you have to end it at some bad note, because if you wait long enough, it'll become nice again, you know, and that would be a really bad, disgusting ending, right? You know, nothing to think about, like that. So the idea is that they'll finish on a good note, but they have to finish right there, because at the next moment, it can go bad again. Does that make sense? So everything is temporary, like that. So the idea is that if it's all connected to Krishna, then you don't have any problem. Right? How much less? Yeah. Yeah, because now we're continuing from the previous one. One should accept the role for which he is qualified. The role that is neither above nor beneath his qualification. Right? On 69. So one may think, well, but why give up something that's below? Okay, I can accept why we've discussed if it's too high, then I'm going to have problems, right? Because I try to be too renounced or like this, then it will either create, you know, an indifference where I won't be inspired to do my work, or I'll be always focused and on that thing that I feel that I've lost, and that will become overwhelming. Right, so therefore I balance it. But now you're saying, what's the problem with keeping those things that are lower? Because, you know, they're pious activities, they're beneficial, right? We're not discussing here keeping the sinful ones. You know, we're you know, the pious ones. And for devotees, then, here, you know, you're discussing the thing of demigod worship and all that, and the devotees, well, I don't do that, right? As they, you know, hit the button and, how you say, and you know, they start singing the umbrella song and stuff like this. So they have their own kind of demigods, right? Their own idea of what's going on, right? And different authorities in the Western culture have said you'll be happy in this way. So here you're not even dealing, means this is a pious, you know, then you're dealing less than that, and it just keeps going on. Does that make sense? So we become distracted by, you know, instead of music from the Shastra, music that's not, you know, instead of drama from the Shastra, drama that's not, cooking from the Shastra, cooking that's not, dressed not, you know, dealing with the family, dealing with friends, dealing with all those things. So it's the same thing. It's just that you remove that piety that's there. But we'll consider that pious. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, we've dropped from real piety, which means dharma, though it's being fruitively applied, into artha, into ethics. Does that make sense? And so what's good on the ethical platform, that we will call dharma. Does that make sense? Because most people can't tell the difference between dharma and artha. Right? Because the idea of dharma is you'll get good results. Right? But good results means, you know, elevation of the heavenly planets or something like that. That we'll call spiritual. You know what I'm saying? So everything's been adjusted. You know? Is that? Yeah. So all these things, anything that gives a temporary result, and thinking that, why give that up when I'm getting benefit from it? But the point is that if it's below your position, then there's no need to be involved. If it's at your position, then it's engaged in. But why would you do it for the material result? You do it to please Krishna. Does that make sense? So in any case, the result's being given up. In Bhagavad Gita 9.22.25, the Supreme Personality of Godhead again explains, "But those who worship me with devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and preserve what they have." Because you're trying, so Krishna is going to make up the balance. So what good is there, because it's connected to the Lord, Krishna will maintain that. What's missing, then Krishna will give that. So that's why with the devotee we don't have to worry. If they're properly situated so that they're properly performing their devotional service, it's just a matter of time before all the proper qualities come. Does that make sense? "Whatever a man may sacrifice to other gods, O son of Kunti, is really meant for me alone, but it is offered without true understanding." Because the demigod has the quality of Krishna, you know, that makes their office, you know, stand out. So the offering made to them is actually supposed to be being made to Krishna. So it's made, that's what it means, without the understanding. Does that make sense? So whatever it is within the material sphere that we consider special, then we offer our, you know, we render sacrifice, right, for that element, for that aspect. But it's Krishna that we're attracted to. Like that. We think it's family, we sacrifice for the family, but it's Krishna we're sacrificing. We, you know, for our economic development, for our position in society, all these things we sacrifice. But the actual point, yes.
But if we call ourselves, like we sacrifice for something less than Krishna, and then because we remember that,
yes,
we try to reach us.
Yes.
It's kind of, it's not
spontaneous.
It's not no, but it's practice. Yeah, and then, well, forcing yourself to think about it, will it be beneficial?
Yes, of course, because the point is it's connected. So it means what you're trying to get to is by the practice and all that, and by the desire, it comes naturally, spontaneously. But even if it doesn't, through practice, then you start to see it that way, and slowly, slowly, then it will start to have effect earlier. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's not that there's any difficult with it. That's the idea of sadhana bhakti. We perform the activity, we may be driven by material motives, but then after, then we catch it, so then we contemplate it, and then we try to connect it to Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's just how the process, that in the beginning of the process, that's how it works. You know, you have to think about all the details. You have to. It's not coming naturally. But if we practice it, it will. Right? Because if they say, well, it's not natural, so why should we do it? But, you know, how many kids just naturally get on a bicycle and ride it? Or even how many kids naturally walk? They get up and the first thing they do is fall on their face. Or, you know, they have to sit back down. So then you can say it's unnatural, see? You know what I'm saying? And they eat proper food, right? The child to eat it, put anything in their mouth. So you could say it's unnatural to eat regular food. It's definitely unnatural to dress, right? But it's up to them. They just walk around. They won't bother with dressing like that. It's unnatural to be regulated. You know, it's unnatural. They don't talk. You know, you have to teach them. You know, and even when they start talking, they don't use regular grammar and everything. Does this make sense? So the point is that through practice, then everything starts to work. So this idea is that if there's any kind of restriction, any kind of force, any kind of uncomfortableness, that's not right. No, it's a matter of practice. But it's a matter of uncomfortable how much you can work with. It's not that it's going to be ecstasy. Going to work and having a job, is that ecstasy? Every morning you wake up and go, wow, I get to go to work today, sit in that, boring, uninspiring office all day with all these people that I hate to be with. You know, doing a job I absolutely, despise. And especially the boss. But, I get to do that all day, so I think that's not what we're doing. But it's how much you can handle. If you couldn't handle that, you wouldn't do it. So that's the whole point. If you're willing to go through so much trouble for Maya, why not the same amount of trouble for Krishna? At least equal. Right? Prabhupada's not mentioning more. He's mentioning equal. One should be willing to work as hard as the karmis. Right? That's so. I am the only enjoyer and the only object of sacrifice. Those who do not recognize my true transcendental nature fall down. Right? So even you're worshiping the demigods, you're pious and everything like that, if you don't recognize Krishna's transcendental position, then one will fall down into the material energy more and more. Right? So he's pious, but then his point is the fruit of result. That's for his enjoyment. So he's actually just wants to enjoy. So all it is he's going about his trying to get enjoyment in a nicer way. But because the enjoyment is what is his focal point, once he gets something, then the attachment arises that one may not be willing to go through the work to get it. So then one will take up impious activities. You understand? So therefore, they'll fall down. So unless they see that it's Krishna, then you can't work with the material energy without getting entangled. You had something?
It's about demigod are devotees.
Demigod are devotees, yes, they're devotees.
So we explain in morning that means for the
river. Yeah, but you're not worshipping them as devotees.
Yeah. But if we... worship or offer something to them.
Usually,
as devotees, they are supposed to offer.
No, the method of worshiping the demigods is you worship, you offer to Vishnu, then you offer to the demigod.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Let's say I come up to you in the temple room, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I hand you a sandesh, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I say, this is Mahaprasad. Mm-hmm. Are you happy? Okay, if I walk up to you in the middle of the temple and I hand you a sandesh, and when I hand it to you, I say, this is boga. Now, what are you going to do with it? It's a whole trip.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So, why? So my point is worshiping the demigods, and they as devotees are supposed to offer it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah. So the point is, you're supposed to offer it, not they're supposed to offer it. And since you have to worship the Lord anyway, and it's His supreme position that's being recognized, then why worship the demigod? Because if you worship Krishna, you've already automatically worshipped the demigods, because they're just all His different arms anyway. They're the different arms of the universal form.
Is it possible to get
some agyata sukriti? Some agyata sukriti means what kind of agyata sukriti?
Means to offer the result to some personality who is higher than us.
Yeah, it means by worshipping the demigods, you go to the demigods. Yes. Right? By worshipping the ghosts, you go to the ghosts. By worshipping the humans, go to the humans. Like that. I think it's just somebody. Right?
Yes.
No, she says the demigods are devotees. So if we offer them worship, then they, as devotees, would worship, offer it to Krishna. But the definition... Huh? Yeah, yeah. So they do the devotional service, and you get the benefit, because, like as Preetu Maharaj said, one who authorizes, one who supports, and one who performs, they all get the same benefit. So because I offered to the demigod worships the Supreme Lord, so therefore I supported their worship of the Supreme Lord, therefore I get benefit. Right? That's the idea, right? Yeah. But you have to remember is they're neophytes. And so the principle is Sura means when there's trouble, they remember Krishna.
When they do trouble?
They have a tendency not to. See, here is that we would think, well, you know, I'm always remembering Krishna, you know, like that, and I may not be so advanced, but we're human. We always get trouble. You know what I'm saying? The demigods don't get, they don't have trouble in day-to-day life. Their trouble is the demons decide they want to sit in the heavenly planets. That's when they get trouble. Or their pieties run out. You know, that's always a problem. Yes.
Lord Shiva,
but he's a great Vaishnava. But they're not seeing him as a devotee. You know, they're worshipping him on the mundane platform. You know what I'm saying? If you worship Shiva that, you know, he was nice and all that, then that's one thing. But if you worship him as the Supreme, then that's another thing. You know what I'm saying? If you worship the devotee because he's Supreme Godhead, then how you get the benefit of him being a devotee? Does that make sense? Yeah. And they're only worshipping to please themselves. They're not really wanting to please Lord Shiva. Like that. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings. Those who worship ancestors go to the ancestors. And those who worship me will live with me. Even a demigod worshipper may at any time engage in devotional service to the Supreme Lord, since this devotional service is the birthright of any person. Bhagavad Gita 9:30, the Supreme Personality of Godhead explains. Even if one commits the most abominable actions, if he's engaged in devotional service, he's to be considered saintly because he's properly situated. I was catching something here. Even a demigod worshipper may at any time engage in devotional service to the Supreme, since it's the birthright. Even one who commits the most abominable actions that he's engaged in.
Going back to the previous paragraph,
yeah, yeah, no. But that means worshipping anyone other than the Supreme Lord, that's abominable. Right? Doing any activity other than devotional service is abominable. Now here, this is a pious activity. Right? Recommended Shastric pious activity. But it's still considered abominable. Right? So we'll take abominable has to be, you know, absolute disgusting. You know, the guy works in a slaughterhouse or, you know, something like that, you know, like that. You know, that's on the weekdays, weekends, he works at the casino, you know, like that, you know, stuff like that, you know. You know, in the evening time, then he's a pimp, you know, so like that, you know, kind of like that. And on the side, because that still doesn't bring in quite enough, then he also sells crack. Right?
In a liquor store.
In a liquor store, yeah. Yeah, so that would be the...
But if he's dressed in a suit, he's a gentleman.
Yes, but if he's dressed in a suit, he's a gentleman. Yes, you've got the essence. Okay, so that's generally when we say abominable. But abominable means it's not Krishna conscious. That's actually the definition, right? Because we're dealing here with Upanishad. Remember, Upanishad, pious activity is not connected to the Lord. If it's not transcendental, it's useless. Right? The aparavidya is, you know, if you're connected to the Lord, that's good. You know, the best, but if not, at least if you're pious, then that's, you know, seems to work. At least that's the idea one gets from the study of the scriptures. Right? But they're still recommending the worship of the Lord. But they don't take the hard line. Right? means you have transcendental knowledge, you know, the paravidya, aparavidya, and avidya. In Upanishads, you have paravidya and avidya. Because the point is aparavidya is apara because it's connected to the Lord. Right? That's the point. So actually, there's only transcendental and ignorance. Right? Now, whether it's direct through paravidya or indirect through aparavidya, but it still has to be connected to transcendence. Does that make sense? It's just a matter of a shift, so it's a little bit more. Because otherwise, from the Upanishadic, then you can understand, you know, what's the standard. Because otherwise, the other one, as long as we're doing nice and it's good, then, you know, we're okay. What the Upanishads is, if it's not connected to the Lord, it's not okay. You know? Does that make sense? So therefore, anything other than devotional service is abominable. Right? Well, we'll generally think, you know, it has to be disgusting even within sinful. Right? Does that make sense? Because when you come from a culture that sin is perfection, then you have to have, you know, really low class or badly applied to be abominable.
It's both sadhana and sadhya.
Sadhana and sadhya means the abominability.
Being sinful.
Sadhana and sadhya, yeah. Yes, it is the process, it is the goal. And if you don't have the right mentality, then you also, the sadhaka has to be sinful also. Otherwise, how is he qualified to work in the field? Does that make sense? So sometimes it's interesting just where the definitions, because as let me these last few days we're seeing is that sometimes how we'll define things is not exactly balanced. You know, if it has that, then it becomes very easy, very clear. The others, then it's the many branched. You know, the intelligence they are irresolute is many branched, because resolute means it's only Krishna. So if we have idea that anything else other than Krishna can make us happy, then that's irresolute. Does that make sense? Upanishads. Yeah, no, they only talk about worship of the Supreme. No. Upanishads is transcendental. Only the Puranas are divided like that, up into the modes for the audience. But in other words, for those who accept Vishnu as supreme, that's in the goodness. Those who accept Brahma as supreme, that's passion. And those who accept Shiva as supreme, that's ignorance. Like that. But someone, the devotee who reads them, will be able to understand the same Krishna conscious import. It's just the wording is used so that those who don't want to understand that Vishnu is the Supreme can be led to believe that their distraction is supported by Shastra. You know what I'm saying? So at least they're following Shastra. The ideas of the aparavidya is that someone at least is following Shastra. Right? And so the life is regulated. Right? They're regulated, they're steady, they're clean. All these qualities that were mentioned of the 26 qualities of the devotee, all those are still, to be pious, you still have to cultivate those qualities. Right? So now, if you have those qualities and you come in contact with devotional service, then it'll be so much easier. The culture, everything will be very nice. In the scriptures, you have to have guru, you have to associate with those who are more advanced, you have to study scriptures, you have a sadhana. Right? Does that make sense? You have a worship. You have a goal. So everything is there, just it's not focused on the Supreme. Right? It's focused on something else. Right? So the lifestyle is compatible. Right? So, does that make sense? Right? So because you see is that, let's say, the Westerners, they take it up. Generally speaking, the philosophy is not the problem. It's the lifestyle, the culture, that's the difficult thing. Right? So those who already have that support of the culture, then it will be that much easier for them to maintain. Does that make sense? So that's the idea. But it should be by reading and being inspired to be involved in all those proper activities than what is doing it in connection to the Supreme Lord. That's the point. One's supposed to see it that way. So. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1260, Srila Rupa Goswami explains, every man has the birthright to accept devotional service and to become Krishna conscious. This is proven with evidence from many scriptures. Right? So one is saying every man, you know, so you give in general, but then we'll look at it, every man means all the guys that I would think are nice guys. So the previous verse is making the point, and no, not even if they're not nice guys. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1138, Srila Rupa Goswami again explains, even one drop of happiness in Krishna consciousness stands beyond comparison with an ocean of happiness derived from any other activity. The scriptures recommend certain methods according to the spiritual status and merit of the aspirant. Such particular methods are always glorified as the highest of all. The scriptural authors have adopted such strategy to uplift all different levels of aspirants. The unbiased reasoning of these principles, however, reveals that their merits are comparatively graded. Right. That makes sense. So they're always glorified as the best because that's the area you're going to apply yourself anyway. Now, if you think it's the best, then you'll be even more enthusiastic. Right? But the idea is that if you actually apply it, then you're going to see its connection with the Lord. But unfortunately, people don't. Therefore, the Bhagavatam was established, because it's direct. Because people study these others. Like, if you read any of these, the scriptures, it'll be discussed that the drama is the best. In another place, it'll say music is the best. Another place, it'll just, each area will say this is the best. If you don't know this science, then you don't really know something. Astrology is the best. Or without grammar, you can't understand Shakti. So it's the best and all these different things. So each one will say that just to give inspiration, right? That one will be involved, one regulates one's life, there's upliftment. But there actually is gradation, right? So then that's being explained in this next sutra.
It can be also like connected that this refers also to the, like in overall in the sutra, that those Puranas will proclaim that worship of this personality is the best. And
Yeah, no, it's for anything. But the point is if you look at it actually, like you said, unbiased, one will see that there is a difference. Right? There is. That's why it says, any secondary entities other than the Supreme is mental distraction, means because you'll be distracted from worship of the Supreme, and temporary results. You'll get some material benefit that'll be temporary. Right? But we're talking about worshiping the Lord getting permanent results. Right? Now, the point is to be happy, not happy in a specific way. You know what I'm saying? We have our idea of happiness. And so if we get that specific happiness, then we'll say we're happy. Right? But if that happiness comes in a different way, as long as we experience happiness, then generally, unless the attachment is too great, then we'll agree, okay, you know. You know what I'm saying? But the point is to be happy. Does that make sense? So we're trying in material ways on this temporary happiness, but the point is Krishna consciousness already gives the happiness you're looking for. In fact, you know, Rupa Goswami says even one drop of happiness in Krishna consciousness is, you know, you can't get, it stands beyond comparison with an ocean of anything else. Like that. So that's why also in the Vedic, it's recommended the pious lifestyle as opposed to impious. That doesn't mean performing fruitive work, but the pious lifestyle affords good facility. And from that good facility, then you can compare. Right? If you're focused on the Supreme, then you can make the comparison. If you're not focused on the Supreme, then you'll be distracted by the good facility. Right? So that's why only what pious activities are connected with your position, you know, in ashram and in varna, to worship the Supreme Lord, only that much is recommended. You go beyond that, then you can easily get distracted. You know, that's the thing. Then it's irresolute, many-branched.
Just came to my mind that if we stretch a little bit and transpose...
Stretch.
The sutra...
Means like in leotards kind of stretch, or stretch rubber band kind
like
of stretch?
Huh? Like rubber band.
Rubber band stretch. Okay.
The Sutra 47 and 46 can also be like referred to our advancement in devotional service, that during the course of advancement we should also not hold back to the methods which were suitable for us on the previous level, right?
Yes.
Somebody achieving Nishtha, after achieving Nishtha should look forward to this developing taste. Mm-hmm. Not stick to just how can I be steady if he's already steady.
No, it means you're looking forward, but the point is it's like as a new bhakta, you know, Prabhupada makes the point is that the new bhaktas, there's not such thing as eating too much. Right? You know, even they kill themselves eating prasad. They're happy, you know, and they're getting purified by that. But, you know, once somebody's, you know, in advance, like a second initiated devotee, then it's expected they'll eat how much they require. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is it's automatic, like you're saying, that they will move on from that which worked before, you know, to what works appropriate for the situation. You know what I'm saying? So one has to seize, like, you know, the brahmachari, he has nothing, there's no complications and all that, but, you know, he wants his independence and everything like this. But then when he's married, it's not that now, as like he was with the brahmachari, that those duties now are, you know, apply in the way of he doesn't have to worry about anything and this and that. You know, unless he follows the principle, the temple commander told him what to do and he does it. Now his wife tells him what to do and he does it. Then it may work. You know what I'm saying? Okay. So okay. The idea is that one is using the intelligence to see exactly what works, what's required, right? Not more, not less. And if you can do more, why do less? But if by doing more, it will result in distraction, then you do how much works. But you have to be intelligent. It's not a matter of, oh yes, I'm just, you know, being balanced here. No, it's a matter of balance is something that's constantly being watched, because it's always changing. You know what I'm saying? We have to always be checking, because that's the meaning of being in the present. Because if you're not checking, then you must be living in the past or future. Because, I mean, if you're not in the present, you only have two options. Right? And neither of those would give a good result. So in the present, then one's constantly checking. So it may be the same, but it may adjust.
Mm-hmm.
this verse is also quoted, the verse in the sutra is quoted also in regarding Niyamagraha. The real steadiness is the piety is defined by
yeah, because one's not steady if one is distracted by worshiping things other than the Supreme Lord. It can be Panchapasana, it can be any other kind of like that. Panchapasana is pretty standard.
We hear that in Kali Yuga there are no Brahmas qualified to do a demigod worship. Is it true or is it just a speculation?
Means you've read in the scripture or you just hear devotees saying?
Devotees said that even Arjuna Das Thakur, he sings in one of the songs that no one can worship the demigods in Kali Yuga.
Because technically you have to worship all 33 million, otherwise somebody's going to feel left out, and that's not going to work so good. You know, so how will that be done? So technically worship of the demigods is never quite successful. Because all you get is some material results, some specific temporary results.
Mm-hmm.
Who qualify people who worship? I mean, what do you mean by standard? See, there's the brahminical qualification in the way of being clean and all these kind of elements, knowing the scriptures and all that. But there's the point of in worshipping the demigods, how one will do it when technically one has to worship all 33 million. You know what I'm saying? How one's going to be able to approach that. So technically at no age is worship the demigods ever actually worthwhile. I mean, you look at it, those who get even benedictions from Indra or from Brahma or Shiva, does it work out good for them? Generally not. You know what I'm saying? Because what they want is temporary, so it's, at some point it's going to give the result of that temporariness. So it never really works for them. Now the author wants to ascertain without a doubt the best of all methods. Right? Because there's all these different methods that are all being, remember we're saying the great sages are all talking about the same subject matter, the Supreme Lord. But the way they've authored it, it looks like it's their own work in relationship to a particular, you know, situation or method. So one might miss the Supreme Lord in studying that. So now he wants to point out what is the best of all of them. So, pratyakshanu manabhyam bhagavata siddhanta eva garyan vijnanamayatvat sarva siddhanta shayatvatcha. Among the spiritual realizations and respective inferences, the concluding decision of Srimad Bhagavatam is the highest among all others owing to its being fully scientific and being the shelter of all the spiritual principles. Right? So in other words, of all the literatures, if it's centered on Srimad Bhagavatam, then it's perfect. Right? That's the highest. The devotional service is the topmost process, and the devotees are the topmost transcendentalists. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to Mantra 15. In the Bhagavad Gita 6.46.47, there is a comparative analysis of the three types of transcendentalists. The worshippers of the impersonal Brahman, Jnanis, the worshippers of the Paramatma feature, Yogis, and the devotees of Lord Sri Krishna, Bhaktis. It is stated there that the Jnanis, those who have cultivated Vedic knowledge, are better than ordinary food of workers, that the Yogis are still greater than the Jnanis, and among all the Yogis, those who constantly serve the Lord with all their energies are the topmost. In summary, a philosopher is better than a laboring man, a mystic is superior to a philosopher, and of all the mystic yogis, he who follows bhakti yoga, constantly engaged in the service of the Lord, is the highest. Sri Ishupanishad directs us towards this perfection. Summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. Direct perception and logical inference, which are two of the great evidences to discern what is the truth, both confirm that devotional service is the highest truth. This truth of devotional service is described in Mahabharata by Lord Krishna to Arjuna, in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam by Lord Krishna to Uddhava, in the four famous verses of Srimad Bhagavatam to Lord Brahma, in the very first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, in many other places in the scriptures, in many philosophical dialogues, with many questions and answers. Thus, the view held by the devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the highest view, the highest truth. It is a truth higher and better than what is taught by the proponents of food of work, philosophical speculation, or other views. This highest conclusion is known as Bhagavat Siddhanta. Since this Bhagavat scripture is the shelter of universal principles pertaining to all the best of the time, space, and person, it should be known to be the supreme among all other conclusions. All the unalloyed conclusions of the past, present, and future are accommodated in this Bhagavatam. In Srimad Bhagavatam 12.13.15 it is said, Srimad Bhagavatam is accepted as the essence of all the Vedic literature and Vedanta philosophy. Whoever tastes the transcendental mellow of Srimad Bhagavatam is never attracted to any other literature. Oh, that's interesting. Right, so then, the Bhagavatam is the highest, and we see that all these places is given. The first verse of Bhagavatam, the Chatur Shloki of Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, like that. So these are all where the essence is being spoken.
Inference
means that trying to understand the unknown through the known. Right? That's because that's how logic works. Right? You know A and B, but you don't know C. But because B is connected to C, therefore you consider that now you understand C. Right? So A and C connect. Right? Inference. I see smoke on the mountain, so by inference I understand there's fire there. Because fire and smoke are connected, and smoke is connected to the mountain, so that means there must be fire on the mountain. Right? That's inference. Yeah. Inference is anumana.
You say it's conclusion?
It's conclusion? It's only conclusion if it's connected to Shabda.
Like that.
Inference. No. Inference basically means it's something you can't see that you are understanding its presence by another thing. Right? Does that make sense? Summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda.
Here, usually we say that we can perceive the truth by receiving, by Shabda. Here it's Actually, I don't understand the sentence.
Direct perception, logical, which are two of the great evidences. And he's saying from that we can discern that what is truth. Yeah, so they're both showing that devotional service is the highest. So what he's meaning is Shabda has already explained it. So even through direct perception and logical inference, it also establishes that devotional service is the highest.
Yes.
Right? Because the idea is that Shabda should be able to be perceived. Right? Means when you can see it, that's where you can apply it. Right? Means I hear the material world. There's birth, death, old age, and disease. Right? But unless, when I can see that, then I have the understanding. Right? So I have to be able to apply it. You know, Shabda should get to the point of pratyaksha. Problem is, it's from pratyaksha trying to understand the absolute truth. That's not going to work. The problem's not with the senses. The problem is if the senses is not based on Shabda, that's a problem. Does that make sense? The question is asked, who is the prophet of this unprecedented conclusion? The following sutra gave an answer to it. Yeah, who's the prophet? Okay, Sutra 49. Chaitanyasya sarvacharyasya virbhave na gurvantaram. Now that Lord Chaitanya, the teacher of all, has appeared in this world, there is no need for any other teacher. Summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. If anybody says that Lord Chaitanya was only a founder of a minor sect called Gaudiya Vaishnavism, so how can he be treated as the universal preceptor? The author replies to this question as follows. Oh, my brethren, when a person impartially studies the explanations, precepts, and scriptural conclusions given by Lord Chaitanya with great attentiveness and along one's own self-evident reasoning, that intelligent person will be bound to accept Lord Chaitanya as the universal preceptor. It will be observed that all sectarian preceptors are only subordinate to him. Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya is the esoteric preceptor of all the jiva souls. At the same time, he has manifested himself in this world with his fullest divinity. Therefore, let all souls engaged in drinking deep the honey of absolute spiritual bliss flowing from the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya by discarding all worldly bondage. What was the conclusion Lord Chaitanya taught in his essence-seeking descendants? Taught to his essence-seeking descendants. Right? No, the essence means those devotees who have surrendered, who are looking for the essence, what did he teach them? Right? The Saragrahi devotees. So that means what did he teach Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, you know, all these great personalities, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Right? So he's pointing out, if you just look at it, just using just logic, with if you impartially study, you'll see what is given, to the way it's given, there's nothing higher than that. We're talking about developing love for God. Here's the most detailed explanation. If you're talking about, getting rid of, sinful activities and being good, it's the most. Right? Whatever the angle you take, it has the greatest definition of how any of those processes will work.
Yeah. Is it workable as an attitude to people? Just see for yourself?
Yeah. I mean, we used to say that. Take the Gita, take it home. Read it for a few weeks, and if you find you don't like it, and it doesn't have anything, then bring it back. I don't remember anyone ever bringing it back like that. Or we tell them, you chant, just chant Hare Krishna for 2 weeks, and if you like it, continue. If you don't like it, stop. Yeah, but the point is that if they'll do it for 2 weeks, they'll never not like it. You know. So that's the point. If you actually look at it, then it will be appreciated.
The way he introduces Lord Chaitanya is like very nice Greek preaching.
We could probably say that the only ones that create real bridges are, you know, written by these acharyas. You know, because generally speaking, bridge means you find a common word that it doesn't have a bad connotation in your mind or in theirs, and that will be called a bridge. But the point is unless it's Krishna, there is no bridge. You know, it looks like a bridge, but when you step on it, you will fall into material existence. So it's not actually a bridge.
This is like a clown, is sometimes compared to a clown that enters like a needle. And
yes, yeah, like that. That's why he's using this method. It's logical. It's taking one step at a time, like that. Because when you accept the previous one, then this one has meaning. So that's how he's doing. You know, in each section you have the 10 sutras. They're all put in order like that. And each section comes one after the other. Right? Because unless you've accepted the position of the Lord, the Jiva, and the material energy, then the process won't mean anything. Right? And once one's accepted the process, then that means there's a goal. And so then within the goal, how do you identify what's the proper goal? Right? Pure devotion is the proper goal, nothing else.
What is the reason they can do this bridging? Because they have Krishna, so they can bridge into wherever it's needed.
Yeah, because all topic matter is only about Krishna. It's just the uninformed think that it's not. Right? It means even when you're talking science, what is the science? This is according to the laws of nature. Right? So the point is who made the laws? So there's no contradiction between God and science. The contradiction comes because the scientists don't want to accept that there's God. That's where the problem comes. Right? Otherwise, why? I mean, would there be a problem with, let's say, somebody manufactures a car? So is there going to be a problem between the study of the car and talking to the person about how the car is made? No, but the one has a disadvantage because they don't actually understand why the car was made. And because of that, there may be so many features you don't catch. You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say you have a car and somehow or another it falls off the bridge into the water and then gets frozen. And then after, you know, however many, 50,000 years, they drag it out and, you know, like that. Now, in the car, you have this little thing that is round, and if you push the button, it goes in and stays for a little while, then pops out and it's very hot. What are they going to think that is? They're going to connect it to smoking a cigarette? Why? Because there's no cigarette in the car. You know what I'm saying? So how will that all work? Why would it work? You know what I'm saying? And then you have a car where all the things are on the where the wheel is, and you can just move your fingers and make them work. Well, the other one, you have to do all this. So what will they come up with? You know, people that had shorter arms or something, then they use the ones here. People with longer arms, they use these other things. You know what I'm saying? So that's the problem is, when you know the person who's made it and why they've made it, then the study of the science has meaning. That's aparavidya. So all things are aparavidya, if they're connected to the Lord. If they're not connected to the Lord, then all of them are ignorance. So there's not a problem. There is no problem between science and religion. The problem is the scientists are too attached to their own faith in their own intelligence. Right? That's all. So you can't combine them. Right? And then the religionists are so foolish, they don't understand that all they're doing is studying God's creation. They're dealing with it as if science is separate from religion. So both of them have missed the point. Though one has faith, one doesn't. So, yes, so then you can use this as your bridge. Sutra 50. Pare purnanu raktir itareshu tulya jare yukta vairagyam cheti sara grahi matam. The religion followed by the essence seekers professes absolute attachment towards the Supreme Lord, brotherly affection towards all souls, and balanced abnegation towards the phenomenal objects. This is the cream of religion. Right? So that's the essence. Absolute attachment to the Supreme Lord, brotherly affection towards all souls, and balanced abnegation towards the phenomenal objects. This is the cream of religion. So that means after having said all that, now this is being made. But if this was made earlier, we wouldn't understand it. Right? Because, you know, it means absolute attachment. Sounds great. Brotherly affection, right? That's cool. Okay, balanced out. Okay. We'll look at balanced. You know, and we'll look at brotherly affection. Right? Does that make sense? And we'll look at attachment. But we'll miss absolute attachment. We'll miss towards all souls. And we'll miss, you know, abnegation towards the phenomenon. You understand? But now with what was going on before, it makes it very exact clear what these things mean. Is the assumptions.
This would be the principle of
any religion. I mean, that's the point. Is you could use this. Here's another bridge for you. This verse. It means this verse, basically you could talk to any religious person anywhere. And it would work. So it's the essence. So now, if that's accepted, now who gives the most detail on developing absolute attachment towards the Supreme Lord? Or the level of what brotherly affection towards all souls means? Right? And then what's balanced abnegation? You know what I'm saying? So no one has a more finer science than Lord Chaitanya. So therefore, it's the conclusion of all religions. And those who he's taught, who are seeking the essence, this is what they practice, then this is the best. The essential religion, summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura's commentary. The essential religion followed by the essence seekers is quite simple and straightforward. Mainly two things are observed, love and good conduct. The objects of love are only two, the Lord and the soul. It is needed to offer love towards the Supreme Lord and brotherly affection towards all souls. Thus, love and good conduct are observed. Balanced detachment should be applied towards all the non-sentient objects in the way of legitimate reliance and behavior. By thorough study, it will be revealed that this type of essential religion is not found anywhere else than in the teachings of Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Because others will have aspects to be able to get all these in this proper balance. Because someone will bring out one, someone will bring out the other. You know, but you don't see that. You know, some will talk about, you know, developing love for God and just being focused on that. I mean, and here I'm talking about in one religion they'll do this. Another will talk about the brotherly affection. Another will talk about giving up all attachment to the material. Right? But they don't talk about all three at once. Like that. And some of them don't even talk about some of these. Okay, so that's the essence. Yes.
Okay. In achieving absolute attachment, is there some possibility of Krishna making up for our lack of attachment? because you scientifically discussed how we are the same person even if we go to back to Godhead.
No, the point is that would be made up by the association of the devotees. Right? Because the point is Krishna arranges it, but it's still done by the association of devotees. Right? Because one goes to the spiritual world, one goes to Gokul, but one hasn't come to the platform of prema. So Krishna arranges through the association of the devotees. And his in his pastimes, that it will bring one to that platform. Does that make sense? Right. Krishna acts in a way that's very attractive. His devotees are very attracted. We associate with those devotees, then we'll catch their mood. That's the whole point, is catching the mood of the devotees. Right? So we put too much emphasis simply on position and the particular qualities that are manifest and all that, we may miss the point of the devotees are enthusiastic. You know, it's like, let's say they have a very nice kirtan, they love doing kirtan. So that's what you're supposed to catch. You know, but saying, no, but when they're not doing kirtan, then they're like this. But that's the part you avoid. But when they're doing kirtan, what's the problem? Where is that one?
Yesterday there was a seminar by Rajendra about the second very nice. And you showed how he converted the whole region based on that Dalai Lama. Even Muslim came to just...
Yeah, no, they were, still in, I think, in Midnapur and that there. It means North Orissa and South Bengal, that was their area. So they did really good preaching. Shamananda and Rasikananda. Okay. Yeah, no, if you can focus. The which? Legitimate reliance. Legitimate reliance, how much you are reliant upon the thing. So what's approved, that much only. You know what I'm saying? It's like the... all non-sentient objects means how much are you supposed to be dealing with it? Right, you know, how much are you reliant on food? Right, so there's a certain amount that's considered proper, but beyond that, then that's too much. Does that make sense? So it's a way. Right? So then the proper behavior, the proper, you know, interaction. You know, should all be dictated by, you know, it says legitimate, so then that would mean, you know, what's sanctioned by Shastra, you know, and what works in that particular environment. Is that okay? Oh, okay.
So we should avoid, not avoid, but kind of minimize that. association in other areas?
Yeah, it means if a devotee is manifesting bad qualities in other areas, then those basically you just kind of avoid. It's not that one's critical, one just avoids. You know, it's just like it comes to taking prasad with somebody who's always critical of this and that, nothing's ever good. Then don't sit with them at prasad. You know, like that. But where they are strong, then that's where you associate. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is like the bee, it takes nectar from everywhere. So you take the nectar and leave everything else. Is that so? End of chapter 5 of Sri Tattva Sutra. Summary of chapter 5. Chapter 5 of Sri Tattva Sutra pertains to the fifth topic of the Upanishads, the nature of the supreme goal and the status of the jiva in mukti. Revealed scriptures are the rays of transcendental knowledge. Right? So it means it's what's coming from scripture, that's where knowledge comes from. Rules and regulations are for regulating the conditioned souls. Those who have attained their constitutional awareness are not limited by such conditions, because the rule is there to get you to that point. If you're already there, you don't require it. But the fun part is those rules that get you to that are the same lifestyle that one follows later anyway. So it's not a problem. You know, it'd be just like, let's say you're sick, right, with fever. You don't like to eat. So you try to take some regulation that they're regularly taking something, and even though they're not much interested, right? But when they get healthy, then you still follow the same thing, but before it was done to make you healthy and you don't want to do it. Afterwards, it's just a natural part of the lifestyle. Status of the jiva. In other words, you've showed what the means the ultimate goal is, but what is the status of the jiva in that ultimate goal? You know, it's just like for the Brahmavad, then attaining the Brahman is the ultimate goal, and the jiva and the Brahman are one. So therefore, the supreme and the soul are the same, right? Does that make sense? So when you look at something, what is the status of the jiva? What's the relationship? Or like the living entity goes to heaven, so that would be the supreme goal would be go to heaven. And so what's the status of the living entity with the Supreme in heaven? Right? So there isn't one in so many religions. Right? You know what I'm saying? So therefore, then you can actually identify what's the position. So that's the idea. Is that means you're looking at God, the living entity, the material nature as sambandha. Then what is the interaction between those three that causes upliftment? Then what's the position on the Supreme? You know what I'm saying? So here then we see as we're dealing with the Supreme, the living entities, and the material energy. So even in the conclusion, then we're dealing with it, but you know, according to what Shastra says, but with no undue attachment or involvement. Does that make sense? So the position there. And it's absolute attachment to the Supreme Lord, so that establishes that. Does that make sense? Unalloyed devotees of Sri Krishna are not to be limited by the conditions of scriptural rules because their activities are based on spontaneous attachment, which is transcendental to rules and regulations. Self-realized devotees of Krishna, due to attainment of knowledge of their constitutional position, are beyond the codes of Varnashram. Because the Varnashram and all these other regulations are there so that you won't do something wrong and there's a good chance you do something right. But if you're spontaneously doing, then there's so many things beyond. You know what I'm saying? Let us say, the person doesn't know so much. So I'll tell them, okay, so then you want to get to this place, you just follow this main road all the way down until you get to the end, and then you turn right and you go all the way that way until you get to this spot. Right? And so don't you know, go off of this path, because if you do, you'll be lost and that and this and that. So many rules will be there, right? But someone who actually knows what they're going and what's going on will go through other streets and this and that, and will get there. Because the Shastra will give what is recommended, that will, in the greatest variety of ways, it means it will apply to everyone, and it will give the best results. Right? Does that make sense? But if one already has the spontaneous devotion, the purpose of those rules are already obtained. So then one may appear to go beyond that. Does that make sense? A selfish performance of activities for the welfare of ignorant people does not create impediment in devotion. One should perform devotional service according to one's acquired nature and qualifications. So to do devotional service, to preach does not get in the way of your own personal development. Because we would think, I will sit down and I will just do my own development like that. When I'm perfect, then I can help others. But no, here is that the process works together. Right? And one should perform according to one's acquired nature and qualifications. Right? Because that's what they do in the spiritual world. Right? If you go to Gokula, right? One's acquired nature and qualifications, right? One's acquired nature, then you have the particular form that performs some service. How absorbed you are in Krishna is your qualification. So according to that, you'll be engaged. It's the same thing. It's just here is by conditioning, there is constitutional. But the principle is the same. The original affinity of the living entities for Sri Krishna, when degraded and misdirected towards others, results in bewilderment of consciousness and material attainments. Right? The natural love for Krishna is applied in other things, and when it's applied in other things, you become distracted and degraded. Right? So that's why it's always recommended, don't worship anybody else, anything else, other than what's connected to Krishna. Among realized knowledge and inference pertaining to the conclusion of it, Srimad Bhagavatam is the highest because it is transcendentally scientific, and it is the shelter of all conclusions. Lord Sri Chaitanya, who has manifested as a universal acharya, makes other preceptors non-existent. In the absolutes of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, other acharyas are absolved. Unalloyed love towards Sri Krishna, compassion and affection towards others, and dovetailing everything in the existence in the service of Krishna. Almost made it. Constitute the cream of religious principles as far as the essence-seeking transcendentalists are concerned. So those who are actually transcendental and seeking the essence, this is what they consider as important. We may consider so many things important, but they consider this important. So that's the summary. So then that's it. So next we'll start with this thematic overview by Atma Tattva. That will start then on Monday.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.